This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting WESA Public Radio in Pittsburgh. School is back in session, but some schools have had a troubling start to the year. There have already been reports of bullying against LGBTQ students with devastating consequences.
An Oklahoma school district was forced to shut down for 2 days after parents used a Facebook group to threaten a seventh grade transgender student.
The student's mother, Brandy Rose, told reporters that several parents had made violent threats on Facebook against her 12-year-old daughter.
And these are adults making threats to a child. I mean, I don't understand it. She's just an awesome kid. And to see any kind of fear in her like that, because other people, especially adults, just... I can't explain how bad that hurts me.
Bullying also took its toll last month at Joe Shoemaker Elementary School in Denver. A fourth grader died by suicide after students allegedly bullied him for being gay.
A 9-year-old boy took his own life last week after reportedly being bullied for coming out to his classmates as gay. Jamel Miles was found dead by his mother on Thursday, just 4 days after he came out to classmates at the start of the new school year.
The boy's mother said it was because he had come out to his classmates.
My son told my oldest daughter, the kids at school told him to kill himself. I'm just sad he didn't come for me.
That was Leah Pierce, the mother of the fourth grade boy who died last month, speaking to reporters. Now, these tragedies touched a nerve for many of you, and they reflect a trend that continues to worry many educators and parents. A recent national survey by the University of Connecticut and the Human Rights Campaign, which is an advocacy group, found that only about a quarter of LGBTQ teenagers say they always feel safe in class. What are schools doing about bullying based on sexual orientation or gender identity? And are they doing enough?
This message comes from NPR sponsor ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel Alarcón, host of NPR's Spanish language podcast, Radio Ambulante. We tell engaging, one-of-a-kind stories that give you a more nuanced sense of Latin America and the U.S. Latino community today. From events that are changing the political landscape to intimate stories about everyday people. Listen to Radio Ambulante on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us to discuss it is Ellen Kahn, the Director of Children, Youth, and Families Program at the Human Rights Campaign. Ellen, welcome to 1A.
Thank you, Joshua. And I want to thank you not only from me and my colleagues at HRC, but from parents and LGBTQ kids for shining a light on this extremely important issue.
Well, we're certainly glad to have you. And we're also glad to have Adriana Ibanez, a sophomore at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Adriana is a transgender student activist and youth ambassador with the Human Rights Campaign. She was bullied in middle school and started a training program for teachers while she was in high school in Chula Vista, California. Adriana, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Ellen Kahn, let me start with you and this research. I understand that HRC and the University of Connecticut say that it was the largest survey of its kind ever. Tell us more about it.
Sure. We had a survey in the field across the nation, and we heard from over 12,000 self-identified LGBTQ teens ranging in age from 13 to 17. We asked questions about their life at home, their family connections, support from family. We asked about school, school climate, peer relationships, mental health, overall sense of optimism. So it's really getting a pretty full picture of the everyday lives of LGBTQ teens right now.
Now, before we dive into some of the tougher stuff, we should note that there was some good news in this survey. I understand, Ellen, that about 90% of LGBTQ youth feel positive about their identity. Is that right?
Yes, actually, there's some very illuminating data about the resilience of LGBTQ young people. You're right, 90% of youth said they were proud to be an LGBTQ person and proud to be part of the community. And 3 of 5 of the LGBTQ teens said they do have access to an LGBTQ student group in their middle school or high school. And that has been shown to have a positive impact on the perceptions of LGBTQ youth within their school experience. So those are, in fact, positive outcomes.
Yeah, let's talk more about the school environment, Ellen. The survey showed that only about 1 out of 4 students said they always feel safe in their classrooms, but only just 5% said that all their teachers and school staff are supportive of LGBTQ people.
Yeah, that's pretty alarming. Obviously, in young people spend the majority of their waking hours at school, and it should be a place where they feel safe and affirmed and they can learn and thrive as students. And far too many of these young people don't feel that the adults in their school community have their backs or are there perhaps to stand up for them if they are experiencing any kind of anti-LGBTQ bullying. We heard that 70% of the youth who responded to our survey have been bullied at school because of their sexual orientation. Over 70% have experienced verbal threats because of their actual or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity.
Speaking of waking hours, you also had some findings related to sleep, or rather the lack of sleep that some LGBTQ young people deal with. Is that right?
Yes. Again, very harrowing statistics. 95% of LGBTQ youth report having trouble falling asleep at night. Their stress levels are very high. 85% rate their average stress level as 5 or higher on a 1-10 scale. Again, just reflecting that the compounded effect of what they often report as lack of family support and lack of safety and inclusion at school. These are compounding factors that really create a burden, an emotional health burden for young people.
Adriana Ibanez, let me bring you into the conversation. How much do these findings reflect what you dealt with in school, being bullied in eighth grade and so forth?
So I found that in my own experience, kids did bully me, kids did harass me, and I did feel not safe at school for the most part. But fortunately, I did live in California. And so, the administration that was, in charge of the school was supportive of me and my decisions. But that's not to say that I still didn't face like all of the depression and all the emotional burden that comes with that experience.
Where did most of the burden placed on you come from? Was it other students? Was it parents? Was it teachers? Was it the lack of support? What was the toughest part?
I think the toughest part for me was getting over the judgment of my peers. And when I first came out, this was definitely like the most arduous part of my journey because they would harass me, call me names, and just chose not to affirm or acknowledge like the new identity that I was giving to them. And that was to be expected on my part because I just felt like this was such a big change. Like at one point I was a boy and now all of a sudden I'm a girl. And so that was a very big like visual indicator that like I was different from everybody else. And obviously when you're first starting out, like you will look different and those students will target you for that, especially in middle school.
We're speaking to Adriana Ibanez, a sophomore at UC Santa Barbara, and Ellen Kahn, the director of the Children, Youth, and Families Program at the Human Rights Campaign. We welcome your questions and thoughts as well, 1A@WAMU.org. Adriana, tell me about the club you set up in high school. What was that like?
So coming into high school, I was very, very shy, and I didn't really have like a sense of community in terms of like LGBT people because in middle school I didn't know any other LGBT person. And so when I came to high school, thankfully there were a lot more people like me, and there were even like teachers like me. And so I actually got taken in by a teacher that was gay. Her name's Nikki Eddy. Shout out if she's listening. She actually took me under her wing, and a bunch of us gay students and a bunch of like just kind of people that felt outcasted always hung out around in her classroom. And so we decided that, oh, we're going to make a GSA.
GSA, the Gay Straight Alliance.
Yeah, the Gay Straight Alliance, I'm sorry. But we decided to make a social justice club instead because there were a bunch of different issues that we wanted to encompass. And we wanted it to be a safe space. Many students felt unsafe going to a Gay Straight Alliance, but they felt safer going to a social justice club. So it was really more for like inclusion as well as like, giving safety for the students that choose to engage with us.
One teacher left us a voicemail about what she does when students use the word gay as a slur in her classroom.
I'm Cindy. I'm calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. When my high schoolers use gay as a generic insult term, I say to the class, hey, yo, listen, my sister has a girlfriend. So if you're going to use that phrase, understand you're paying a really high compliment my administrators don't love my sharing that kind of personal information with the class, but I don't care. I care about making my gay kids feel like they are in a place that's safe. And it works. They leave thank you notes on the board when I'm not looking.
Yeah, Cindy, thanks very much for that. Before we pause, Ellen Kahn, it's kind of disheartening to hear Cindy say that things like that's so gay are still considered an insult that so many kids still use.
Well, kids are saying it from a very young age. And I know we heard from one of the school principals with whom we work that a second grader was using that as a term to sort of harass or taunt somebody. You're so gay, you're so gay. And the teacher asked the question, do you know what that means? And the young person said, no, I don't. And the teacher said, why are you saying that? And the student said, because my older brother said it's the worst thing you can call someone.
It's just like playing with fire. They don't know that it's got the power to burn somebody. Adrian, I'd love you to react to this. This is someone who didn't want to come out as gay after seeing other students bullied. Here's what he left in our inbox.
My name is Eric, and I am calling from Arlington, Virginia. In high school, I wasn't sure if I wanted to come out as gay. And when I saw other people who had come out being bullied, it really made it almost impossible for me to come out until years after high school. Even though I knew my family and friends would be okay with it, the fact that I knew so many people had been bullied so much for being not straight was a lot for me to deal with.
Eric, thanks for sharing your story with us. Adriana, does that ring familiar to you at all?
Yeah, so before I started my transition, I really sat down and just thought about, like, what are the consequences of me transitioning and how are the people around me going to react? Now, I could have, you know, I had fears that people wouldn't like me anymore, people would stop talking to me, you know, like just common middle school fears you have, especially when you're going through such a big change. And I don't know, it just rings to me because I felt the same way, but I just could not stay in my own, like, I could not stay stuck as a boy anymore. So I chose to come out of necessity, out of, like, the person inside me could not stay locked up any longer. And so
Go ahead, please, finish your thought. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. And I just feel like so many other kids go through the same thing, so you weren't alone in being afraid to come out.
For parents who may be listening to this, Adriana, I wonder if you could share, insofar as you're comfortable, what your process of discovery was like. When did it begin to dawn on you that something in your identity, in your appearance, in your perception, didn't match your identity? What was that like for you?
So growing up, I always knew that something about me was different. I was always inclined to be playing with the girls. I was always inclined to more feminine things. I just couldn't quite place it, especially because when you're younger, adults don't really treat you differently, you know, apart from giving you different toys and stuff. But I definitely noticed it more around the time that puberty started, around the time that my body started changing, and I did not like the effects that my natural body was giving me. And so that's when I really felt, like, discomfort, and I felt the need to come out in order to mitigate that, like, incoherency within my body.
Before we bring in a few more guests, we should offer up a resource line for those of you who may be listening and dealing with the struggles of coming out as LGBTQ. There is a service called the Trevor Project, which was set up specifically to deal with crisis intervention and suicide prevention for LGBTQ youth. Here is the number. It's available 24/7, 866-488-7386. You can also go to its website, thetrevorproject.org. That's T-R-E-V-O-R, thetrevorproject.org. And you can speak to them online or via web chat or via text or on the phone.
Joshua, this is Ellen. I would really like to add that young people are assessing whether adults around them or peers as allies are going to step up for them. So to speak to the caller, Eric, for example, he was observing other kids being bullied because of their real or perceived LGBTQ identity. I'm sure he was also looking to see whether any adults stood up or stepped in and said, this is not okay, this is not what we do in our school, this is why, and to hear positive messages or affirming messages. So I think that's a really important point, that we must see action on the part of educators, school administrators, other adults who are part of the school community, to make it clear that the school doesn't accept or tolerate any kind of anti-LGBTQ bias or any other bias for that matter.
I'm glad you brought that up, Ellen, because that dovetails perfectly into our two next guests and an initiative that you're involved with called the Welcoming Schools Program. Joining us now on the line is Stephen Chen. He's the Director of Training and Accommodations for Boston Public Schools and is a certified facilitator of the Welcoming Schools Initiative. Stephen, welcome to 1A.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Sasha Heavey, a learning specialist with Gardner Pilot Academy, which is a pre-K through 8th grade school in Boston. Sasha, welcome.
Hi, happy to be here.
Stephen, give me a sense of what welcoming schools looks like in Boston public schools. What kind of an impact is it having right now?
Yeah, so the Welcoming Schools initiative is a multi-pronged and multifaceted approach to bring to our schools training for elementary educators on a number of different topics, including welcoming diverse families. And when we talk about diverse families, we are talking about LGBTQ status, but also mixed immigration status, adoption, foster care, multi-generational families, how to create LGBTQ and gender-inclusive schools and classrooms, how do you prevent bias-based bullying, and also how do you support transgender and non-binary students. And so when we brought this to the Boston Public Schools, one of the key things that we were hearing was there were a lot of, for our students, teachers are often the most trusted adults in their lives in many cases.
I'm sorry, Stephen, I hate to interrupt you, but I just want to make sure you use the term non-binary. You're referring
yes.
to students who don't squarely identify as either male or female. They are kind of gender non-conforming, right?
Correct. And so essentially... Okay. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, so you were referring to teachers often being among the most trusted adults in a child's life. Go ahead.
Right, and so basically we would have students go to their teachers and basically say, hey, I need to talk to you about my identity. I need to talk to you about I am LGBTQ. And oftentimes teachers would not know what to say. Teachers would not know what to do. And so they would contact their building principal or administrator, and eventually those calls would come to my office, where essentially we needed to find a way to train teachers and help teachers have these conversations with students so that they would feel included, they would feel like their classroom was a safe and welcoming place for them.
Sasha, you've taught kindergarten classes using some of the Welcoming Schools methods. I can imagine that some parents would be surprised that their little 5-, 6-, 7-year-olds would even have this on their minds at all, that this would even come up in kindergarten.
Very true. Basically, our whole school has a shared philosophy and belief system. My school is a K-0 to 8th grade. K-0 is 3-year-olds, preschool. And we just really try to be as safe and as welcoming to our families and students as we can. We make sure that we have age-appropriate read-alouds at each grade level. We make sure we have inclusive conversations with our students. We've read, entire school participated in the national reading of I Am Jazz, which is a story about a young student who is transgender. And, you know, when it comes to younger students, you just simply state, does a student like Jazz belong at our school? And the little kids, they just go off and, of course, so supportive. They're even confused about the question. Why would a student like Jazz not belong in our classroom? And it really just goes to show that when they're young and impressionable, they really are just so caring and inclusive already. You just want to continue to foster that within them, and at each age level and grade level, meeting them at their point, and continuing to have courageous conversations. Continue to make sure you're protecting students and being there for students, but also understanding that these are little kids and they're curious and they're witnessing changes within some other students. And really just being able to, as a teacher, be prepared to talk about topics with students and not avoid.
We've heard from some of you about school experiences that were inclusive and in some cases that were downright traumatic. Aaron tweeted, "My alma mater, about an hour southwest of Pittsburgh, had a group of students organize an anti-gay day where they wrote Bible verses on their skin and terrorized suspected LGBTQ students. This was in 2015. Kristen wrote on our Facebook page, "Thank you for addressing this topic, especially during the back-to-school time. I'm part of a group of mothers, Mama Dragons, that started as a group of Mormon moms with LGBTQ kids that wanted to support them. It saved me when my son came out. People can find us on Facebook at Mama Dragon." Interesting that this exists, Ellen Kahn, because the lead singer of Imagine Dragons, who is Mormon, has started this whole conversation about LGBTQ acceptance in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But I wonder, Ellen, in terms of schools dealing with this, I have to wonder what the gap is between programs like Welcoming Schools and existing school policy. I don't know one teacher who's not worried about liability with someone else's child when it comes to being bullied, sexuality, harassment, intolerance. It would seem like the rubber should hit the road at that point in terms of district policy and liability.
Yes. Big shout out to the Mama Dragons. I'm a big fan of theirs. And what they're doing is groundbreaking and without question saving the lives of young people. I think this is a great point. We have some structural challenges. Only 19 states and D.C. have enacted anti-bullying laws that explicitly protect students from bullying based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Just 13 states and D.C. have passed school non-discrimination laws and statewide regulations to protect LGBTQ students. So we have a lot of gaps across the country. We have seen remarkable things at the school district level, where districts in some relatively conservative areas that lack statewide protections will enact district-wide policies because they realize that LGBTQ students are at greater risk. The data bears it out. The everyday experience bears it out. But absolutely, there are breakdowns. These policies don't exist across the country. They're not federally mandated. And so there are, and I think to that earlier voicemail about the kind of anti-gay day that was, you know, ostensibly rooted in religious beliefs, sometimes the rubber hits the road because school administrators are more fearful of a few very conservative parents who say, "How dare you discuss these topics with my children?"
Right,
versus
right.
responding to a parent of a gay or trans or bi kid whose kid is being bullied. And that's where schools must decide what they're going to do.
Momo of Boys tweeted, "My LGBT son was bullied in middle school and high school online by entire school sports teams. Thankfully, our state had anti-bullying laws that we made them adhere to. The school developed a diversity flag to support diverse students, but left out the rainbow flag in it." Adriana Ibanez, let me come back to you. We heard from Cindy from North Carolina earlier about kids using the word gay as a slur in her classroom. How much is that still a thing? Do you find that at a place like UC Santa Barbara, in a place like Southern California, that young people just kind of grow out of that as they become more worldly wise, or is that still a thing?
I think it depends on where you are. I think in UC Santa Barbara particularly, the people here are much more liberal, and so the people here tend to be a lot more supportive of LGBTQ people. But I still have heard people say homophobic and transphobic things. And, you know, for me, it kind of makes me have fear because, like, this is my school and now I'm an adult, but it's like, this is still happening. You know, like, the bullying is kind of still happening, not directly at me now, but, like, directly at my community.
Yeah. Stephen Chen, what about teachers who are part of a welcoming school? Do you ever get any pushback from them? Any concerns about being part of the program?
Yeah, so I think one of the key things that I can speak about with teachers that I interact with in BPS is that for the most part, teachers are all on the same page with regards to we want to create safe, welcome places where students can learn and flourish. And so the real question isn't, I don't want to have this conversation with my kids, but the question is, how do I have this conversation? And so one of the key questions that I hear a lot is, are kids too young to have these conversations starting in the elementary grades? And I think the answer to that really is that kids are already thinking about and having these conversations on these topics. And there's really two ways that you can do this. Number one, you can have these conversations in places where you have staff that are trained and that we can have these conversations about gender identity, which really starts to develop and is developed around 3 years old, and the kids are thinking about and having a place where kids can explore, share about themselves and their families in safe ways. Or if you don't have that training, if you don't have that preparation, you have the conversations that happen on the playground and during recess, which becomes homophobic slurs. It becomes places where kids are experimenting with language, kids are experimenting with their ideas in ways that are unstructured and unsafe. And so really what we are focused on is how do we have these conversations in the classroom in ways that create safe and inclusive places for our students?
Yeah, Sasha, I was just going to ask you about that. I know we have to pause shortly, but those spaces where kids congregate that you don't have real full control over, I imagine that must be a challenge to creating a welcoming school. I'm thinking about the school bus. That's where I got bullied, not often, and I shut my bully up for good. I'll tell you that story when we come back. But I imagine like places like school buses are just fraught with difficulty in making the school welcoming.
Yes, I feel like places like school buses, the cafeteria, recess, those places can be tough to ensure that students are feeling safe and welcomed. However, with the help of Stephen Chen and all of the trainings that we've done through the Safe and Welcoming Schools Initiative, all of our paraprofessionals, our after-school teachers, along with obviously the administration and teachers as well, have gone through these trainings. And on many of our school buses, our paraprofessionals also double as assistants on the bus. So they have gone through these trainings and are feeling empowered to deal with these topics as well.
Brianna tweeted, "Thank you for the show about this topic. I spent my entire life in the shadows and suppressed being myself because I was so afraid of being bullied. I didn't get the courage to come out as transgender, until my late 30s. We need to do better for today's kids to live their authentic lives." We'll continue our conversation with Ellen Kahn of the Human Rights Campaign, Adriana Ibanez, a sophomore at UC Santa Barbara, Stephen Chen of Boston Public Schools, and Sasha Heavey of Gardner Pilot Academy. We'll also speak to a teacher in rural Georgia about what happened after he agreed to be an advisor for an extracurricular gay-straight alliance club. Stay close.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting your shortlist of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Peter Sagal. Come try the only show that treats the news the way it deserves to be treated, roughly, with lots of tasteless comments. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sarah emailed, "I'm actually in school listening to this now. The LGBTQ plus youth community center I go to, called Time Out Youth, does an annual event called the Carolina Conference of Queer Youth that is all about helping students feel welcome and accepted in school systems. It took me a long time to build up the courage to come out to my school. I was actually planning to tell everyone, but then the Orlando shooting happened, and I found it impossible to find that courage again until only a few months ago." Well, kudos to you, Sarah, for finding the courage to do that. Ellen Kahn, one quick question before we bring in our next guest. Sarah referred to the event, the Carolina Conference of Queer Youth. I remember one of my challenges coming out was the Q word. I didn't want anyone calling me queer. It took me a long time as a black dude to put the G word to me, but the Q word, that was a bridge too far. How much do you find that is an issue, just being willing to put the word to what you are?
Well, I think young people are more and more comfortable finding those words. There's a lot more language accessible. I know I was just having conversations with some of my colleagues who identify as pansexual, non-binary, And the teens in our survey identify in many ways that are outside of the boxes we're used to checking. I find that young people are leaders when it comes to telling us who they are and how they feel. And whether we understand the words and terminology or whether we like them or not is not really a concern. It's just to respect and recognize how young people are identifying. I think queer is a word that's been reclaimed by sort of a younger generation, yet it does still kind of raise the hair on the arms of some of us who are 40 and over.
Speaking of terminology, we referred to how some schools have GSAs, gay straight alliances. Some schools call them genders and sexualities alliances. One teacher who was involved as an advisor to one is Nick Hodge. He teaches English at Thomasville High School in Southern Georgia, and he joins us now to share his experience. Nick, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you were a teacher at Berrien High School in another town in Georgia, Nashville, Georgia, in a rural southern county, for 12 years, as I understand it. There was a GSA that was starting up there. Tell us about how you became its faculty advisor. What inspired you to get involved?
So my department had been asked by some of the kids to sponsor the club, and she agreed to do it if she could find someone who would help her. And I was asked, would I help her? And I told her that I would. And so that's how I got involved. The kids came and they were very, very appreciative and they thanked me for it. And that's how I got involved.
This may seem like kind of a blithe question, Nick, but did you realize what you were getting into by being a faculty sponsor of this group?
Well, I knew there would be some resistance, but I was a very popular teacher and much beloved by most of the people in the community. And I knew there would be resistance. I did not anticipate there being as much resistance as there was.
Before I get to that resistance, how many students were in your school's GSA?
About 15.
About 15. What kinds of things did the club do? What sorts of activities?
So it was mainly student-led. And the kids would talk about historical issues related to gender and sexuality. People did do little bios, like people like Harvey Milk, and I would get little videos and stuff to show them, and that kind of thing. You know, just to let them know that there were people there that supported them and valued them for who they were.
Harvey Milk, the former San Francisco supervisor who was shot dead back in the late 70s by another supervisor for being an out gay lawmaker, who was killed in San Francisco City Hall alongside the mayor, George Moscone. Now, Nick, you were harassed by teachers and parents after getting involved with this GSA. Is that right? What did they do?
Well, several of them came up to me and they would say things like, you know, gay people are possessed by demons and that they should be put to death. And that they were praying that God would strike me down and my family and stuff like that. And I don't want to leave the impression that all of the teachers were like that. There were very few, but there were some. Many of the teachers, while not publicly, they were very kind. And so it was mixed for sure.
How did you? I bet. How did you respond to that when they said those kinds of things?
Well. You know, of course, I didn't agree with that, and it wouldn't have done any much good to argue with them. But I mean, I know the Bible really well, and so we would discuss it. I'd say things like, well, you know, you say that it's an abomination. Well, so is eating pork, you know, and you don't believe everything in there. It says that you're supposed to put a stubborn child to death. You know, you don't believe that. And so in my view, it was an improper way of using the text.
I understand that eventually you left that school. Is that right, Nick?
Yes, sir, I did.
What was the last straw?
Oh, man, they just made it very, very difficult, and it was so painful. I love those people. I love the teachers, and I love the students, and I love the people in my community, and it's important to know that most of them, even the ones that believe these terrible things, they're largely uneducated, and they've been taught really badly. And I guess the last straw was They rode me really hard, the administration. They made it very, very difficult for me. And I just decided that it was probably best if I left.
I'd love to get some reaction from our guests. But before I do that, Nick, give me a sense of the impact that this GSA had while you were there. What was the biggest difference that you saw that it made?
Well, a lot of kids who had been taught this nonsense about gay people being possessed by demons and nonsense like that. I had a lot of students who told me that they saw things differently. And I know from talking to the students who were gay that it helped them a great deal. And so while it was very expensive to me in my personal life and my professional life, it is a price that I am not regretful that I paid.
Stephen Chen, I'd love to get your reaction to what happened to Nick and how common this kind of thing might be. I don't want you to have to speak outside your experience from Boston if you're not more learned beyond your district, but what do you make of Nick's story?
Yeah, so I think I would first just thank Nick for sharing that story. And it's a horrible, horrible experience that he shared, and I do thank him for that. I think one of the key things that I'm hearing about this is, and Ellen actually made mention of this earlier on in the show, which is there is a lack of clear policies and clear laws in states all around the country that explicitly protect students and staff on the basis of gender identity and sexual orientation. And I think Nick's experience goes to show that at the very fundamental baseline of what we need is we need enumerated laws and policies that explicitly call out that attacking staff and attacking students on the basis of their sexual orientation, of their gender identity, is not okay. And not only that, but there are protections for people at the state and federal level in order to get those addressed. I can speak from my own personal experience that if something like that were to happen in the Boston Public Schools, there would be recourse if someone were to report that in our district through the office where I work, which is the Office of Equity.
I should note, by the way, we did reach out to Berrien High School in Nashville, Georgia for comment, but they did not return our call. That offer still stands. We'd still love to hear from them. Ellen, I do wonder, though, Ellen, I mean, I think these efforts to try to make schools more welcoming are great, but I think there's a point at which some of us just decide to be a little more pushy. I mentioned that I had been bullied on the school bus when I was in high school, and I remember there was this one kid who just needled me every day when I was on the bus about all he just tried to get a rise out of me, and I just was like, just stay quiet, just don't say anything, just get home, don't bother him, stay home. And finally he zeroed in on me and he made an all-out assault. His final shot was when he said, hey man, are you gay? And without thinking about it, I turned around and I fired back, why? Are you lonely? He stopped riding the bus. He disappeared. I never saw his sorry behind again. And I wonder, Ellen, if there's a point where that's appropriate, where people who are tired of being bullied, who are sick and tired of being sick and tired, can say, you know what? Screw you. I'm smarter than you. I deserve an education. And you about to find out how fierce I am. And if you don't like it, you can kiss my butt on both sides because I deserve an education. And if no one will protect me, I will protect myself. Is that ever appropriate? Is there a point at which that is necessary or worth or justifiable?
Well, it seemed that it was necessary and probably justifiable for you. And
because I'll tell you what, if I hadn't found my spine on that day, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation. I'm certain I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I mean, I think your point, and you mentioned this was a school bus. We talked earlier about certain places where young people are entirely vulnerable. There is not an adult around, or certainly not an attentive adult. And, you know, I think, you know, Adriana has shared an example of a way in which she said enough is enough and started to organize a club. You found a way to say enough is enough and stood up for yourself. Many young people can find that resilience and strength, but many cannot. If you think about the climate at the school where Nick taught, and Nick, I also want to extend our gratitude, and it was wonderful that students could see the empathy and the character you had and trust you. I'm sorry that the story ended the way it did. But students in that school, given the hostile climate they're in, may not find some power inside of themselves or a voice inside of themselves. I still believe that it is up to the adults to teach and model what it means to be respectful and inclusive and to make sure that every young person is valued.
Sasha Heavey, could you chime in on this? I imagine with very small kids who are still, you know, learning how to manage their emotions, who haven't quite watched enough Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood to learn how to deal with anger, when those moments flare up, they can be disastrous. What do you do in that kind of situation?
Well, I actually haven't experienced a situation where a child has exploded, as you said. But my school, along with all of these trainings that we've gone through, we also have multiple social-emotional programs that we have and curriculums that we use at different stages of their development through preschool to eighth grade. So we're also prepared, and children are becoming prepared via the lessons and their experiences with their peers. There's lots of role-playing and different scenarios and explicitly teaching them skills. So I feel as though, I'm not saying that an explosion will not happen, but I'm hoping that at the Garden Pilot Academy, we are preparing our students to deal with their emotions and come to a peer or a teacher who they feel safe with.
Let me get to a few more of your comments as we're winding down. Mark tweeted, I came out as bi in seventh grade at a Jewish school in Baltimore, and it was a mixed bag. I was physically bullied by older kids, but more disheartening was homophobic harassment from two teachers and sexual harassment from another. But I also had many teachers and friends supporting me. But it's interesting to hear the stats about LGBTQ youth and sleep. I barely slept in high school. We also got a voicemail from Patricia, who has a transgender granddaughter. Here's what Patricia left in our inbox.
I have a transgender granddaughter, and I live in a rural Catholic area where she would not be welcomed in the school system or be able to use the bathrooms of her choice. She does, however, live in St. Louis and goes to a charter school where they accept her as she is. I just wish everyone would get on board with these children because they need love.
Patricia, thanks very much for sharing your story. I know we got to wind down, but I wonder what kinds of advice you might share for parents and teachers and students who are dealing with this. Sasha Heavey, if I could stick with you briefly, I wonder what you would suggest for teachers who are trying to be good advocates for their kids, particularly because I understand that you have been challenged by some parents at times. What would you recommend for teachers, briefly?
Can I ask a clarifying question? Do you mean teachers in other school districts?
Or the teachers who are trying to stand up for LGBTQ kids who are being pushed around.
Yes. So, you know, I think that they could take a page out of Nick's book and really just stand up for what they believe and stick with their philosophies. And I come from a school that I am very supported by my administration. My principal, Erica Herman, took the lead in ensuring that all of the teachers get trained. You know, when we did a remodel of our downstairs floor, we now have, you know, bathrooms that anyone is welcome to use, regardless of what gender they identify with. Yes, exactly. So I really just feel that when it comes to teachers, you need to have support from your colleagues and with your administration so you feel confident in living out your belief system and the philosophy of the school.
And before we go, Adriana, what advice would you have for young people who hear this, who are struggling with bullying, briefly?
I want you to be active. I want the young people to be active in their own liberation. You know, you don't have to sit there. You can shine on your own and you can be who you are. Don't be afraid because there's people like us out here that are informing people. And, like, the more that we inform people, the more educated they become about LGBTQ, like, issues, then hopefully the less discrimination we will face.
Adriana Ibanez, a sophomore at UC Santa Barbara and a transgender activist. Ellen Kahn, director of Children, Youth, and Families Programs at the Human Rights Campaign. Stephen Chen, director of Training and Accommodations for Boston Public Schools. Sasha Heavey of Gardner Pilot Academy. And Nick Hodge, an English teacher at Thomasville High School in Georgia. Thank you all for being with us. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening, and remember, you're not alone. You never were. This is 1A.
Hey, wait, before you go, it's Joshua. First of all, thank you for listening. Secondly, we'd love your input on this podcast. This month, we really want to know what you like, what you don't like, and what we could do better. Send us a text message to join our text message club. Text the word podcast to 63735. When you subscribe, you'll get updates from us from time to time on upcoming shows. You can always unsubscribe by texting the word stop. Again, that's the word podcast to 63735. All right, now we're done. Thanks.